ER 101. Get the 411 on your 911. Here's your host and emergency room physician, Dr. Lee Vinoker.
Hi, and welcome back to ER 101. Well, recently published in the Annals of Emergency Medicine is a fascinating study that looks at the special needs of transgender patients in the emergency room. And I'm lucky enough to have the author of that study, Dr. Greta Bauer, who's an associate professor of epidemiology and biostatistics in the Schulich School of Medicine and Dentistry at the University of Western Ontario in London, Canada. So thank you so much for being here, Dr. Bauer. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here.
So I want to ask you first, and it's a very interesting study, and I have, I'll tell you my background a little bit, because I started out in surgery, and I actually worked at Wayne State University with the Dr. Neil Wilson, who was doing, and I hate to admit how many years ago, it was 20 plus years ago when I did my surgery training, and he was doing transgender surgeries back then.
Okay.
for the Midwest. So I worked with him, and what was interesting to me about this is that when he would go away on vacation, I actually did some moonlighting and covered some of the patients just because they didn't feel comfortable going into the emergency room. So when I read the article, I was just fascinated. So tell me a little bit about how you started to look at this.
Oh, sorry. Well, this is part of a much larger community-based research project that really came out of lack of really kind of culturally competent healthcare for trans people. And in fact, the project originated when a community health center in Toronto decided to really focus on providing solid primary care, not emergency, but primary care, mm-hmm. for trans patients, and suddenly started getting calls from all over the province of Ontario, which is a huge geographic area. So they got calls from people who would have to drive 5 hours and wanting to know if they could get health care there. And that just really made it stand out, the issues that people were facing in accessing safe and, you know, reasonable health care in their own communities. And that was sort of the genesis of this project. So it's exciting to finally publish the emergency medicine portion. It was one of the things that we're looking at in conjunction with a lot of other issues around health and healthcare access.
And let's talk a little bit about, before we talk about this study, because are there, what type of special health concerns or health needs do you see that are important that actually can cause people to say, oh, you know, we need a clinic, you know, set up specifically? There must be some specific and different health concerns that trans people have.
There's actually no reason that trans people can't get care or shouldn't be able to get care from any primary care physician, then with occasional consultation with other specialists as needed. I think that it's been something that because for people who transition, either socially transition to live in a gender other than the one that they were assigned at birth, or medically transition through hormones and or certain surgeries, it seems very drastic to physicians. And so there are a lot of doctors that don't have experience and aren't comfortable with it and don't realize that trans people, a lot of trans people just have the same basic needs other patients do, with a little bit of cultural sensitivity and perhaps a little bit of attention to mental health, especially around the time that people are transitioning, because there's a lot of social upheaval that happens, and symptoms of depression and anxiety can go up quite dramatically. There are a couple of new cohort studies that just came out, from one from Belgium and one from Italy, that show that that those symptoms, those mental health symptoms, drop back down to population levels after hormone treatment. So I think it's important for physicians to know, though, that not every person who's trans is necessarily going to medically transition, and there's not one trajectory. So within a family practice, for example, there could be people who don't fit very clearly into a binary gender. They may or may not feel that the level of dysphoria that they're experiencing requires medical intervention. So there's a really, really broad range. And it's a very broad range of people who end up showing up at the ER. People who you might have seen in your prior experience, people who are going through sex reassignment surgeries, and other people who who never do that and some who never feel that they need that or that that's appropriate or necessary for them. So it's a really broad group of people. And medically, they're dealing with, I heard you talking about diabetes, they're dealing with diabetes, they're dealing with, you know, respiratory infections and all the usual things that aren't necessarily affected by their gender.
Well, I would think that those that really don't go through the extreme of the gender reassignment surgery, that definitely is the case, that they're, you know, other than maybe some mental health issues related to the decision to live this way or feelings, you know, they have associated with their old life and old family and friends, the health concerns would be the same. But I would think once you're going through the gender reassignment, there's issues with high levels of hormone replacement, which we know increase risks of certain types of cancer depending on the hormones. And, you know, I would think that there's issues related to infections and surgery and things like that, that are a little bit more specific for that community. Is that true?
Well, surgery is always a concern, right? Surgery always comes with a particular set of risks around infection, complications, you know, how the healing goes, if there need to be revisions to the surgeries. And so it's possible that trans people would show up in an emergency room with complications from surgery, but that's one short period in a long life of a person, right? And so that's obviously a point where specialist care is needed, and where sometimes it's very difficult to find, it can be difficult to find surgical care, but what I hear more of here is difficulty with follow-up, so that if people travel elsewhere for the surgery, they might be back home when they experience complications. And so that's where they might be interfacing with the emergency room or things like that. But in terms of hormonal treatment in uncomplicated cases, you know, it varies a lot from place to place throughout the U.S. and throughout Canada as well. We're here in Ontario. But a lot of, you know, I know in our study, most trans people who were on hormones were getting them from their family doctor. And there are certainly protocols for family doctors to prescribe hormones in uncomplicated cases. There might be other cases where they're going to need to call in an endocrinologist or where they might want to bring in a psychiatrist if there are some serious mental health concerns that they need to deal with. But in a lot of cases, that's handled within family medicine as well, and family doctors can do the, you know, the blood tests and the ongoing monitoring that's needed. And then if a problem arises, they refer to an endocrinologist.
Mm-hmm. Are there special screenings that patients require once they're undergoing the hormone therapy? Because high doses. They're not physiologic doses if you're reassigning
gender. No, the goal
gender.
Is to bring the hormones into physiological levels for the gender, the sex that they identify as. So there might be, you know, you're talking about increased risk of particular cancers, and that might be true in comparison to somebody's birth sex. But I think you also need to look at that in comparison to the sex that they're living in. So we did a full literature review earlier on that. And it seems in some ways like people might be exchanging one set of sex-based risks for another. So, for example, trans women who are taking testosterone blockers, we don't have the long-term data, but it's pretty plausible that they'd be at reduced risk of prostate cancer. Uh-huh. So we can't really say. I think it's important that physicians are aware of the hormones that a patient's on and that they're appropriately monitored for long-term follow-up. But I think we really need more research on long-term effects of hormone therapy because there's just so much that's not known, and a lot of the studies that have been done are very short-term.
Yeah, it is fascinating, and it would make, you know, sense to me. Obviously, women that are transitioning or men that are transitioning to women, and once they get that part of the surgery, as far as prostate cancer, it would go down. But as we know, men and women both can get breast cancer. So, you know, taking estrogen hormones for that, too, later on to grow breasts and stuff puts you at risk also for certain types of cancer. So it is interesting, and I could understand why physicians that aren't that comfortable with it would at least want to talk to a specialist. This is ER 101. I'm Dr. Lee Van Oker on Radio MD. Stay well.